Lancaster, Ohio was once America's quintessential industrial success story, so perfect that Forbes dedicated an entire issue to it in 1947. At its heart stood Anchor Hocking Glass Company, the Hockin, as locals called it, which employed nearly a quarter of the town's population by the 1960s. The relationship was symbiotic. When the factory burned in 1924, residents raised funds to rebuild. When the company needed a hotel or hospital, executives helped make it happen. Workers didn't get rich, but they bought homes, raised families, and sent children to college. This wasn't just capitalism, it was a social contract between business and community. What happened to this American success story? A police officer named Eric Brown, watching his hometown crumble under economic devastation and drug addiction, fights back tears in a local pub. My mom and dad are still here. My son's here. He's raising his son here. His emotion speaks volumes about what's been lost. Lancaster's transformation from thriving industrial center to struggling, addiction-plagued town wasn't inevitable. It was engineered by Wall Street players who never set foot in the community they dismantled. Everything changed in 1982 when corporate raider Carl Icahn began buying Anchor Hocking stock. Though management bought him off with a $3 million profit, the company was now in play. This coincided with Milton Friedman's economic philosophy becoming dominant, the idea that a business's only social responsibility was maximizing shareholder profits. Executives increasingly disconnected from their communities. By 1984, Anchor CEO Ray Topper pitted plants against each other. When Ohio's EPA demanded new exhaust scrubbers at Plant 2, Topper gave Clarksburg workers an ultimatum: accept wage cuts or face closure. If they agreed, Plant 2 would close instead. 20 days before Christmas, he announced Plant 2's closure, devastating Lancaster's economy. The final blow came in 1986 when Newell Corporation acquired Anchor. They immediately fired 110 headquarters employees, and by year's end, all 300 office staff were gone and headquarters closed. Newell executives refused to live in Lancaster, viewing it as a hick town. The town company bond fractured as corporate civic involvement and donations vanished. In 2004, Lancaster entered the private equity era when Cerberus Capital Management purchased Anchor Hocking, severely cutting retiree benefits and pay. Longtime worker Brenda Stone couldn't afford her $1,183 monthly insurance despite decades of service. The extraction worsened when Monomoy Capital Partners acquired Anchor in 2007, investing just $6.5 million while loading the company with $68.5 million in debt. Union leader Chris Nagel recalled Stephen Presser's candid admission: "We're only going to keep you for 2-3 years. We're selling you. If I can't get you sold in 3 years, I'll shut you down." Monomoy immediately fired 70 union workers without notice and sold Anchor's distribution center for $23 million, forcing the company to lease it back for $2.3 million annually with built-in increases for 20 years. While securing $10 million in Ohio state loans with promises of long-term commitment, they extracted millions in monitoring fees while burdening the company with unsustainable debt. While financial players extracted millions, Lancaster residents suffered. Brian Gossett, a fourth-generation Anchor employee, operates dangerous machinery amid deteriorating conditions, frustrated by management's neglect. "The people who own the place don't give a shit about us." An aspiring artist, Brian feels trapped in a system that fails workers and America itself. Across town, Mark Kraft supports his heroin habit through an established supply chain. Once an aspiring pilot with good grades, Mark turned to drugs after a disciplinary incident, progressing from marijuana to OxyContin to heroin, a path many Lancaster residents followed as economic opportunities vanished. Meanwhile, Wendy Oatney works the late shift at Taco Bell for $8.50 an hour, earning about $563 biweekly. Her husband John is unemployed after his employer relocated. Both their fathers worked at Anchor Hocking, and despite completing financial counseling to escape predatory payday loans, they still struggle financially. In May 2014, the 109-year-old company closed indefinitely, leaving 900 people without paychecks. While workers struggled, Everywhere's board promoted CEO Sam Solomon with a $600,000 salary plus bonuses and $100,000 in moving expenses, more than factory worker Brian Gossett would earn in a decade. By March 2015, Everywhere Global faced viability concerns from its independent auditor. In April, the company filed for bankruptcy, eliminating nearly $250 million in debt. The bankruptcy process cost roughly $21 million in professional fees, with lawyers billing over $1,000 per hour, about 100 times what new anchor workers earned. The contrast was stark. Financial players walked away with millions, while workers faced impossible choices between health insurance and food. Joe Boyer couldn't afford proper treatment for his knee problems due to high deductibles, and with premiums consuming about 1 week's wages per month, many younger workers opted out of insurance entirely. Lancaster's social fabric unraveled alongside its economy. Once vibrant neighborhoods declined as businesses closed and drug addiction spread. The town's class divide had grown severe. Executives no longer mingled with workers, and shared civic spaces disappeared. Political divisions ran deep. Local politics devolved into amateur dogmatism while conspiracy theories flourished. Real corruption existed too. The county clerk was imprisoned for misusing public funds following earlier convictions of a sheriff and judge. Many Lancastrians, especially those over 50, decided negativity was the enemy. The mayor promoted forced optimism with the underwhelming slogan, "We're no worse off than a lot of other places." Yet, despite dreams of an artisanal scone-based economy, Lancaster still desperately needed manufacturing jobs. Lancaster had become one of America's five largest markets for predatory lending, with companies extracting over $318 million in fees. Most residents couldn't name the financial players who had transformed their town, not because they were rubes, but because they had their own lives and work to manage. Lancaster's tragedy exemplifies a pattern across America's industrial heartland. When asked what happened to Lancaster's social contract, former police officer Eric Brown simply stated, "Corporate America is what happened." The social contract collapsed through unchecked corporate greed. While locals emphasized personal responsibility, private equity firms enriched themselves without accountability. This fracturing affected everyone. Even wealthy locals lost faith. Everybody's out for number one. Take care of yourself. Zero respect for anybody else. Lancaster serves as both metaphor and warning, showing how communities were dismantled not merely by market forces, but by deliberate financial engineering, prioritizing short-term profits over sustainable businesses and human lives. When financial interests override human concerns, communities fracture like glass along predictable stress lines. The human toll, addiction, poverty, broken families, lost potential, remains immeasurable, while those responsible face no consequences. Lancaster challenges us to choose between an economy treating communities as disposable assets or one valuing social bonds and shared prosperity. The question isn't if Lancaster will survive, but whether we'll learn from its story before more communities share its fate. Will we repair the widening cracks in our social contract before the glass house shatters completely?